May it please the court. My name is Bruce Wilson. I represent Gerald Miller in this appeal. My co-counsel who handled the case at the trial level is Bernard Whitney. He's seated here to my left. This case involves the following fact situation. Mr. Miller and his then wife purchased a house in Fort Worth in December of 1977. There was a note on the property. They made payments on the property, and then Mrs. Miller left. There was a divorce proceeding. Mr. Miller could not afford to make payments. So the property was posted for foreclosure, and there was a trustee's sale by the mortgage company in March of 1992. Because Mr. Miller was still married to Mrs. Miller, he did not want the property to be in his name. He wanted it to be in somebody else's name, and he got Mrs. Mitchell, who is a relative of his, to be in the property foreclosure sale. And she was the successful bidder, and Mr. Miller paid the purchase price. He paid the mortgage off based upon the trustee's deed. Mrs. Mitchell, who's now deceased, retained the property in her name until 2007, when the deed was executed. Now, during that period of time, Mr. Miller maintained the property, lived in the property, maintained as his homestead, paid all the expenses on the property, paid the mortgage on the property, and lived there with his child as his homestead. The record reflects, based upon Mr. Miller's affidavit that's in the CR 164, that Mrs. Mitchell had repeatedly urged Mr. Miller, you've got to get the property back in your name, but it was never done until much later. In 2006, Mrs. Mitchell executed a durable power of attorney to Mr. Miller. The next year, Mr. Miller, under the powers granted by the durable power of attorney, executed a general warranty deed. Now, this is something that has not been briefed, but it is, I think, kind of important to bring up. The deed was not to Mr. Miller, it was to his son. And that is in the record at page CR 166. Mr. Miller's son is not a party to this lawsuit. And never has been. He's never been served. And this issue was not raised until today, but that there's no waiver of that, because under the Supreme Court opinion of Mapco versus Carter, 817 Southwest 2nd, 686, text 1991, it is fundamental error if the court enters a judgment that over a person's rights and property when that person is not a party to the lawsuit. And that can be even raised for the first time in the Supreme Court, which is exactly the fact situation in the Mapco case. The issue was raised for the very first time in the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court sent back, so we're going to try it again. So for that reason alone, this case should be sent back for a new trial so the proper parties can be brought in. And I cannot imagine, if we don't do that, I can't imagine what a title company is going to do with this property. They're going to look at this and go, well, how do we issue a policy? I don't see how they could unless this whole thing gets resolved.
But isn't one of the issues in the case whether this lawsuit actually even determines title to the property?
Yes, it is. That's one of the issues in the case. We think it did not. It shouldn't have, because on the summary judgment motion, there was not a request for voiding the deed, but in the summary judgment order, did void the deed, which is outside the scope of the motion for summary judgment. Now, in addition, this case should have clearly been tried as a trespass to try title action. That's the proper venue for resolving disputes to real estate. And
may I interrupt a moment and ask a question about that? I'm having trouble seeing it as a trespass to tribe title suit because Mrs. Lucas, or Mrs. Mitchell, who then died and Lucas acquired her rights by assignment, has never claimed title. She recognizes, or she, yeah, title is in Mr. Miller.
Or Mr. Miller's son.
Or Mr. Miller's son.
Okay.
And she has never claimed title, so she's not, it's not a dispute over title at all.
Well, it is because we have another, I think, competing issues that need to be resolved here. For example, Mr. Miller paid the purchase price on the property. Mr. Miller paid the taxes on the property. In a trespass to tribe title action, even if the title is ultimately vested in Miss Lucas, Mr. Miller would be entitled to reimburse for what he spent on the property. And he spent, according to the record, $15,000 in taxes, and he paid the mortgage on the property. The property is now free and clear of the mortgage. And Mrs. Lucas paid nothing, nor did Ms. Mitchell pay anything. The only person who paid for this property is Mr. Miller.
How would title be vested in the claiming title?
Who's got a claiming title?
Mitchell Lucas.
Well, the problem begins with the son's the one that's properly claiming title. Now, Mr. Mitchell would be claiming equitable rights in the property because of the contribution made to preserve, protect, and pay the taxes on the property.
He's claiming he has equitable title.
He's claiming he has equitable rights in the property and an equitable title because of the improvements he made in the property. But he did convey the property to his son. That's in the record.
The deed says Jay.
Yes, ma'am, that's his name.
Just Jay Harry.
Yeah, well, his full name is Gerald Miller, too, but he's about Jay, it's not on the record, but it is in the record that the deed was to the son.
In Mr. Miller's affidavit.
It's in Mr. Miller's affidavit, yes, ma'am. Page 166 of the record. And I would point out to the court, in terms of the reimbursement rights, there's a forward court of appeals case from 1921 versus Hood, 230 Southwest, 468, which said that makes improvements on the property, pays the taxes on the property.
So the
taxes are also paid by
the owner. Has a right reimbursement for that.
And that now is
the way you need to feed.
Because if you notice what's happened here, in the motion for summary judgment, they asked, the property
coming on
is 3621 North Little Drive Avenue, immediately conveyed to plaintiff free and clear hand on encumbrances placed in the property since March 9th, 2009. It doesn't ask to declare the deed void.
It just says
conveyed the property.
But the court
of the trial court in his
judgment
said, in addition to conveying the property to her, declared that any encumbrance 3621 North Little Drive Avenue
declared any void.
Now that clearly
and adversely
potentially
adversely affects Mr. Miller's son.
Right now
there's a judgment that says
she's conveying the property free and clear of all encumbrances.
Page 17 of the brief announced, asserting that because the
trespass to tribe title action was not asserted, that is an affirmative defense, which has now been waived. Okay, so what they're trying to do is they're going to take this simple motion for summary judgment and merely sought to get the title conveyed to Mrs. Lucas to turn that into a complete bar to any claims by either Mr. Lucas at all and potentially a complete bar to his son.
Are you saying that Millers have an equitable title in the property?
Yes,
or have an equitable lien?
They've got an equitable lien to the
Or that they have an equitable lien on the property to the extent of the taxes and the upkeep and so forth that they
provide. Our position is that Mr. Miller Sr. has an equitable lien on the property, that Mr. Miller Jr. has title. That is our position.
Okay.
and not legal title, not just equitable title.
The copies of tax statements that are in the record, it seems to me to show that, sorry, I'm not talking in the microphone, the taxes were paid in 2012.
Yes, some of the taxes were paid in 2012.
And that the prior statements, they're in the record to show that by some handwritten notes, Mrs. Mitchell recognized that the house really belonged
to yes.
Mr. Miller. But in the prior statements, what I wanted to comment about was from the ad valorem tax folks, it showed that taxes were delinquent.
Yes, ma'am.
Up until there was this $15,000 payment in 2012, which was after suit was filed by Ms. Lucas.
Yes, ma'am. I got the record here, but the record reflects what really happened. Now, it doesn't go back to 1992 on the end day taxes. It goes back to like 2006.
I think it goes back to 2000. 2000 to 2006 is listed on the statement that was sent by the tax attorneys.
Okay. But, Mr. Wilson, yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir. It seems that your equitable lien and equitable title argument is somewhat inconsistent, since if the son has equitable title, then the equitable lien action is against him as the owner.
Well, I think that would be, if this case were tried as a trespass to try title action, I think that would be the ultimate result. Is Mr. Miller's son would have title, and Mr. Miller would be entitled to be reimbursed for what he spent on the property.
From his son.
If assuming his son is successful in getting title to the property. Now, if Ms. Lucas is successful in getting title to the property, then Mr. Miller Sr. would have an equitable lien for his expenditures on the property. Now, let's talk about fiduciary duty for a second. Mr. Miller clearly was a beneficiary of power of attorney. He clearly executed a deed, probably in violation of his duties under the power of attorney, even though he didn't execute it to himself. There's no evidence that Mrs. Mitchell actually signed written consent to the transfer like you normally do when a trustee is transferring property to, for example, a relative or an employee. You usually get the beneficiary say, okay. He says, okay. That didn't happen. But what we've got here is we've got a man who maintained this property as his homestead. To this day, 36 years he's been living there. And I'll concede he did something that's pretty stupid.
2 minutes.
But the punishment here should only be setting aside. The only punishment here should have been setting aside the deed, not wiping out its title, and using this case and the appeal to turn Mr. Miller out of his home. So it's just not right. Just not fair. It shouldn't be done. It should go back and be done the correct way with all the proper parties before the court.
What is your position that Mr. Miller Sr. obtained title for the property?
He obtained
that title. He was able then to give to his son.
Well, because under the power of attorney, he conveyed it to his son. But again, I think given the fact that he had equitable rights in the property, he could have conveyed his equitable rights to his son too. The only transfer of title was that power of attorney, the deed under the power of attorney.
So his lien is to Ms. Mitchell up until the time that he transfers the property, and the lien is to his son after he transfers the property.
Correct.
Title goes from her, Mrs. Mitchell, directly to the son.
Under the deed that was executed under the power of attorney.
Okay, this is somewhat unusual because we haven't heard any of these arguments about the son before.
I will concede that, Your Honor. I didn't really notice that this affidavit, because it's at the very top of the lane and I've got this thing braided up and it's a little hard to see that top line. I didn't really see that until last week and I went, well, that's interesting. And then realized that was a real problem, because the problem is what are we going to do with the title? Things to be a mess. Let's suppose the son comes in and files a trespass to try title action in his own name. Are they going to use this case to try to defeat that? Maybe.
I think this all should be tried at one time, one place, and should be sent back to the trial court.
Now, I have a question. Why did Mr. Miller not want the property to be in his name when he and his wife were getting a divorce?
Because he was concerned that if he got the property back in his name, that she would get a share of it.
Okay. What about the funds he used to give Mrs. Mitchell to pay for the house with?
Don't know where those funds came from.
Okay. It's not in this record?
It's not in the record.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Wilson. Mr. Mosley.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors, just to refute a few things, this is not about a trespass strike title case. It never has been, nor was it required to be. This is a case for breach of fiduciary duty. As opposing counsel has admitted, the evidence did support breach of fiduciary duty took place. An appropriate remedy for breach of fiduciary duty is disgorgement. Disgorgement was pled for in this case, and it was properly applied. And in addition, we requested that all of the liens since the breach had taken place be removed. And the court used the language to void those liens.
How could you get both disgorgement and removal of the liens, which to me is a double recovery?
Your Honor, the only liens, and again, this is the first time today that I have heard argument that any liens existed. What they're saying is that equitable liens existed. However, those equitable liens that they're arguing for would have been acquired through a breach of fiduciary duty. And it's
wait a minute, he paid for the property with his money. He's not entitled to that money back.
Your Honor, there was insufficient evidence. In fact, the only thing that was offered at the trial court was a naked and self-serving affidavit from Mr. Miller.
But what contrary evidence was it?
Your Honor, that affidavit was objected to on the grounds that it violated the dead man rule. There was no contrary evidence because that would be proving a negative, Your Honor.
Was there a ruling on the objection? It's evident in the record, reflected in the record.
I believe the objection was made via letter brief submissions that we submitted to the court, and I believe that any ruling would have been in the court's written response on that. However, as Your Honor was talking about earlier, where did the money come from? That affidavit on its face is not reliable because, as was explained to the trial court, what that affidavit is talking about is that Mr. Miller perpetuated fraud on the divorce court by, if this sort of circumstances was true, he diverted community funds outside of the community in order to protect this asset.
That's a cause of action by the wife.
Yes,
not the parties in this case.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. However, what it does do is it does allow us to establish the credibility of, again, his naked affidavit.
But credibility is something for the prior fact of the time, not the prior of the law.
Correct, Your Honor. In this case, there was no jury demand, so the trier of fact would have also been the judge.
Okay.
This was a summary judgment.
Yes, Your Honor, it was. Your Honors, all of these statements that we also heard about how he had lived there for decades, how he had owned the property prior to Ms. Mitchell's acquiring the property, these are all irrelevant. It's undisputed that Ms. Mitchell acquired the property in 1992. If he had felt that he had some sort of claim of title to that property because he used funds to purchase it, then he had a cause of action he needed to bring against Ms. Mitchell for putting the property in her own personal name. He lost that cause of action in 1996, Your Honor, because limitations were. So to bring it up now in 2014 is a little bit late.
So your position is that title was never determined in the summary judgment hearing that you all had. Is that correct?
The court recognized that prior to the execution of the deed by Mr. Miller, that title rested in Ms. Mitchell.
Okay, so did the summary judgment order then convey the property back to Ms. Mitchell or declare that to be the legal and equitable title?
Ms. Mitchell subsequently passed away. My client is actually the successor in interest through proceedings in probate court one to this property and to the lawsuit thereon. And so the property, in compliance with that agreement from probate court one, was conveyed to my client.
Well, the devil's advocate to say your client wants the property that she never paid for, nor did her predecessor pay for.
Well, Your Honor, my client is asking for the property that she
pretty
was supposed
clear of all liens and encumbrances, to wit, what the property was paid for.
Your Honor, and again,
that is your position, is that they didn't prove it.
Well, Your Honor, they're asking for equitable relief.
Okay.
A party that comes before the court
must have clean hands.
Yes, must have clean hands. And so, since they don't have clean hands because they have admitted to breach of fiduciary duty in these same transactions, they can't get equitable relief. So,
your remedy for breach of fiduciary duty was voiding of deed or conveyance of the property, as opposed to both that and voiding of the lien against the property. I mean, again, I keep thinking that you're wanting two bites at the apple. You want the money. You want to void the money that was paid for the property, and you want clear title of the property also. But the breach of fiduciary duty was conveying the property away when there was no right to do so. That's your position. Therefore, the remedy for the breach of conveying the property away when there was no right to do so is to void conveying the property away. But then you also want the money that was paid for the property originally. It seems to me that you're getting like a double recovery for wrongfully conveying away the property. Am I missing something?
Your Honor, and I guess maybe we're interpreting this differently.
Okay.
I don't see where we're asking for the money that was used to purchase the property.
Okay.
There are no liens on file that I am aware of.
So you want to void any equitable right that he might have to monies that were connected with the purchase or maintenance of the property, in addition to voiding his conveyance to the son as a result of the breach of the fiduciary duty.
I believe that would be a fair assessment. However, Your Honor, I would like to address this issue of the son, as has been stipulated by Mr. Wilson. Here today is the first time that issue has been argued. As you cited, the deed says J. Miller. And we sued Mr. Miller at his house, served him at his house, and this is the Mr. Miller that showed up to defend the lawsuit. It raised the issue that, hey, you've got the wrong person. So it seems a little bit disingenuous to come before court today and suddenly discover that we've got the wrong Gerald Miller. How many Gerald Millers in Tarrant County are we going to have to go through before we get someone who says I'm the right one? Your Honors, what they're asking for with being allowed to keep the property, being allowed to have any sort of equitable rights to the property, is tantamount to, as another attorney told me earlier, saying, I stole the property and I've got it, so now I get to keep it. And that is just not something that the law will tolerate. When you breach your fiduciary duty and you have acquired property through that breach, the appropriate remedy is you give it back. And you put the prior owner in exactly the same position as they were right before the breach took place. In this instance, that is Ms. Mitchell owning a piece of property with no encumbrances on it. And that's exactly what the court did here, except that the court then further, in accordance with the ruling from probate court one in Ms. Mitchell's estate, transferred the property to my client.
And your position that there's no encumbrance on it is because limitations had run?
Well,
he had an encumbrance on it because he paid for it. So he had at least an equitable lien on it. I'm hearing on breach of fiduciary duty.
Yes.
I got you. He couldn't convey it away because he didn't have the authority to do so. Got it. Okay, but Mr. Miller Sr. had an equitable lien on the property, which is the position it would be just before all of this took place, would it not?
Your Honor, if he wanted to claim an equitable lien, he needed to have done so.
So your position is
limitations were.
Limitations has passed on that.
Okay.
And furthermore, Your Honor, again, he's attempting to claim equitable rights with dirty hands. When there was argument at the trial court about whether or not he had paid the taxes, the court pointed out he's a tenant at sufferance in that property. He was being allowed to live there by a family member, and it's not uncommon for family members to allow another to live in their property and say, instead of rent, you pay the taxes, you pay the upkeep on the property.
Is there a statute of limitations on asserting the land?
I'm not saying there's not.
I'm asking if
I don't know. I believe that would be a 4-year.
So is your request that this court affirm basically the summary judgment order granted by the trial court in its entirety?
Yes, Your Honor. However, I've also stated that if the court believes that the language voiding encumbrances is somehow either beyond pleadings or something like that, then this court can simply affirm the portion of the judgment reconveying property to my client and allow the issue of encumbrances to be removed from the judgment. And then if someone wants to come to the trial court and assert in action that they have an encumbrance, that is their right and that issue can be dealt with at that time.
What about the fact that he asserts that the property belongs to his son now?
Again,
did he raise an issue of fact on that with his affidavits? I believe it's a supplemental affidavit as well as an original. Has he pleaded himself? No, I guess he can't. I was looking at his counterclaim where he wants a declaratory judgment that he is the owner of the property. And he, that's it. His request for relief is dismissal of all plaintiff's claims, declaratory judgment declaring that Gerald Miller is the owner of the property. And that's not the son. Okay.
Correct, Your Honor. That is this Mr. Miller that was served and did answer and did say he wants the property. So I find the sudden mention today of the son to be disingenuous at best.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mosley. I appreciate your argument. All right. We have rebuttal now from Mr. Wilson, please.
Mr. Wilson, tell us again how Jay Miller is suddenly the son.
It's in the
affidavit.
Well, it's in the affidavit. It was filed in November of 2012. So they've known that the son had a claim to this property since November 2012, and they didn't do anything about it. They didn't sue him.
Well, that shoe fits on 2 feet, though.
Well, I understand that, but just because Mr. Miller took the position that he wanted the property does not destroy the rights of the son. The son has to be made a party. You can't just deprive somebody of property without them being a part of the lawsuit, serve the process. So
the affidavit says, I conveyed it to my son, Jay Miller.
It's the affidavit says, I conveyed it to my son. It does not say Jay Miller. It just says, I conveyed it to my son.
Okay.
Now, let's start again.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, again, I think Justice McCoy really hit the nail on the head here. The only thing that happened here that could possibly constitute a breach of fiduciary duty is the execution of the deed. Nothing else that happened could possibly constitute a breach of fiduciary duty. And therefore, the remedy of completely destroying all the liens and all of that on the property, all of which liens had nothing to do with the fiduciary duty breach, if there even was one, it's just a remedy that shouldn't have been made available at a trial court, shouldn't be granted. And finally, I would point out that there is nothing in the record where the trial judge says the payment of taxes was rent. There is nothing in the record that says that at all. Now, and there's no evidence that the money that Mr. Miller spent to pay off the trustee's sale was community property. But I'm not sure that makes any difference. I think as you pointed out, that's the ex-wife's potential claim, and I don't even know where she is. She may have a claim to this at some point.
Was there any summary judgment evidence as to who paid off the taxes?
It was Mr. Miller's. Mr. Miller stated that he paid the taxes.
And his affidavit.
And I will correct what I told Justice Garner. It did go back to 95, I think, when the tax, when they started picking up the back taxes. So I will correct. There was no actual pleading of limitations in this case. There's no pleading of latches. As a matter of fact, there's no response to the counterclaim at all, which I find kind of interesting. But that's not in the record. It didn't happen. It hasn't been raised or thought about by the trial court. They're all affirmative defenses. None of that's been raised. And finally, again, I think I need to really need to point out, God, what, 2 minutes. I need to just point out exactly where we are in this case. We've got a man who paid for this house his entire adult life. And because he did something stupid without the aid of an attorney who said, no, you really can't do it that way. You got to do it some other way. He did something stupid. And this happened, you know. I've represented even sophisticated people who've done things almost this dumb, which is okay for the lawyers, but it's not good for them. And the problem, again, Mr. Miller went off and did something really stupid, and punishment, taking away his homestead, destroying his life, and giving Ms. Lucas, who hasn't paid a penny, the property free and clear of liens, is just not right, and the case should go back and be retried.
Was there any proof that it was actually his homestead?
I think in the affidavit I'll find it here.
I mean, because I'm wondering how he got a homestead if legal title was in his son's name as opposed to his name.
Well, you can have a homestead and property you don't own. You can't do that. But that happens all the time. Let me see if I can find the affidavit here real quick.
Well, you'd think he would have claimed deductions on his income tax.
Well, one would think.
For his interest,
yes. Let's see. I don't see the word homestead appearing in the affidavit, but it clearly indicates he has lived on the property since
1977.
Page
3 of his affidavit in support of his motion for summary judgment, he says in paragraph number 7, I began to
all right. I'm sorry. Yes, ma'am. I didn't miss that. As my homestead, and he's done that ever since. So again, the fair thing to do here is, and the right thing to do is send this case back so we try the proper theories.
Well, since the equitable outcome of this case seems pretty clear, have you all visited with Mr. Mediator any time recently?
We have not.
We have not.
It's something I consider with a great deal of significance.
All right.
Reflect on that
thought.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Thank you, Mr. Mosley. And Mr. Whitney, thank you for being here as well. We appreciate all your work and briefing in this matter, as well as your arguments here at the law school. Your case is now submitted, and you all are excused.